Well, we turn in our continue in our series in the book of Ruth. We turn to Ruth chapter 2. And we left off last Lord's Day that Ruth and Naomi returned to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. And we did see that Naomi remained in this disposition of bitterness. And Ruth, well, she continued in steadfast faithfulness unto Naomi and unto the God and to the people of Naomi. And we shall see in this narrative that it is precisely the faithfulness of Ruth and not Naomi's bitterness that changes the scene for both of these women. We could say that Ruth's faithfulness trumps over the elder Naomi's bitterness. Remember, dear saints, that it is when we trust and obey God that, in a sense, as one writer remarked, God begins to work on our behalf. Now, we have somewhat of that in Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And here we have a biblical example of this very truth in the woman of Ruth. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path. We shall see that the path of Ruth is now directed in the direction of Boaz. And what we have in this chapter 2 is the commencement of Ruth and Boaz. But it's not just Ruth and Boaz who are the prominent characters. God remains a prominent character in this narrative. In the background, God is working. We could say that God's invisible hand is clearly seen throughout this book of Ruth, and especially now as he brings in his providence Ruth and Boaz together. We see in verse 1 that Boaz is mentioned, and verse 1 here is like a preface to the rest of the book. The narrator is letting us know that there is one who is a kinsman to Naomi, and his name is Boaz. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. What we have before us, dear congregation, is a work of God. We read in Mark 10:9, what therefore God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. And God here brings together Ruth and Boaz. We are now then, dear congregation, in our study, brought to the point of a joining in a harvest field. We have noted God's hand of providence throughout. From verse 1, God has been dealing with Naomi and her family. Now we see that God continues to deal with Naomi through Ruth. And we are brought to this joining point, which is our theme for our time remaining, a harvest field. A harvest field. And we will notice Ruth in the harvest field. We will notice God in the harvest field. And we will notice Boaz in the harvest field. Firstly then, Ruth, a willingness to work in a harvest field. Willingness to work in a harvest field. Verse 2 and 3a. And Ruth the Moabite said unto Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, my daughter. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. We are immediately confronted here, aren't we, with the willingness, the faithfulness
of Ruth. To go and to labour. To go and to glean in the harvest field. Just as a pleading not to let her go was recorded in verse 16 of chapter 1. And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave you." That was a point where Ruth did not want to go, did not want to leave. We are brought here to a request to go. Now she wants to leave Naomi. What does she want to do? She wants to go and glean in the harvest field. Provide for her and for Naomi. We should also note her continued kindness to Naomi. She says, "Let me now go to the field." She doesn't say to Naomi, let us now go to the field. No. You see the devotion and the kindness Ruth has to her mother-in-law. Naomi, no doubt, was well on in years. She was tired and weary. She had experienced a difficult life. And Ruth knows this. And Ruth says to her, "Let me go. I will go and glean in the harvest field." An act of kindness. Ruth, who would prove better than seven sons, as we noted last week, to Naomi, so commences, as it were, a labour of love. And this is what this is, a labour of love. It was hard work in the harvest field for those who gleaned after the reapers. Ruth's willingness is immediate. And Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, "Let me go to the field." It would seem as if the narrator's only brought us to Bethlehem at the time of barley harvest in verse 22. We have the preface in verse 1. And straight away, immediately, we're brought into her willingness to work. Her zeal is quite remarkable. But we must notice this, that even though she is a stranger, she is a Moabitess, her zeal is not without knowledge. She has a degree of knowledge. We have already noted this about Ruth. Verse 16 and 17 of chapter 1. She has a knowledge of the true God of Israel. "Thy people shall be my people, and thy God shall be my God." So it is not a zeal without knowledge, but it is an informed zeal. She knows in whom she believes. She knew the one in whom she trusted, the Lord. We see this again in her willingness to serve and now to work. She knew and she trusted. These two things are vital in the Christian life. We should know the God in whom we serve and believe. Therefore, we should trust and go forth in faith and labour and work in the kingdom of our God, whatever capacity that finds us in, whether being a witness to our neighbours or no. She knew and she trusted. Well, how can we say this about Ruth? Well, Ruth knew that God had in his bountiful grace provided for strangers, orphans and widows during the harvest season. No doubt she had been informed by these women who were moved in the city, remember, with excitement, with Naomi coming back. No doubt Ruth had conversed with them also. "Is this that you bring back with you?" And no doubt they had informed Ruth of this provision that God in his grace had made in his law for the poor, for the orphaned, and for the widow. What was this law? Well, we read of it in Leviticus and chapter 9. I mean, not read all of these verses. But Leviticus chapter 19, verse 9 and 10.
And we read there, "And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. And thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and stranger." And then the Lord finishes it with, "I am the Lord your God." So in God's law, there was provision made for the poor and for the stranger. And then Leviticus 23 and verse 22. "And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not make clean riddance of the corners of the field. When thou reapest, neither shalt thou gather any gleaning of thy harvest. Thou shalt leave them unto the poor and to the stranger." And then we have again, "I am the Lord your God." And also Deuteronomy 24 and 19. You see, Ruth knew that there was provision made for her and for Naomi in the law of God. God's grace, there was provision for them. But she was also to trust in the Lord. And if we turn to Exodus and chapter 22, Exodus chapter 22, verse 22 and 24. "Ye shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If thou afflict them in any wise, and they cry at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry. And my wrath shall be waxed hot, and I will kill you with the sword. And your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless." What are these verses mean? Well, Naomi trusted that in God making provision for her and for Ruth. Sorry, Ruth trusted in the Lord making provision for her and Naomi that she would not be afflicted by any. Because the command is, "Ye shall not afflict a widow or a fatherless child." So she not only knew that provision had been made, but she also trusted that she would not find an unfavourable landowner. That she would find grace in someone's sight. And that's what it says, isn't it? "In whose sight I shall find grace." So she knew of the provision, but she also knew that she would find grace in the sight of one. Because to be unfavourable to a stranger or a widow or an orphan was a great crime against God in the land of Israel. We also have Deuteronomy 10, verse 17 to 19. You can look that up at your leisure. The example of Ruth then teaches us to not only to be willing to serve others, but ever willing to serve Christ in our serving of others. And that immediately. We cannot wait until tomorrow to serve Christ. We must serve Christ now. John 9:4, while it is day. Why? Because the night cometh when no man can work. So dear Christian, there ought to be an immediacy about your willingness to serve Christ, to work for God, to live a life of faith in your community, in your street, in your university, in your school, in your workplace. A willingness to serve God. Her willingness teaches us a number of things about Ruth. Firstly, she experienced poverty. She was in poverty with Naomi. They had no food. They had no resources in order to gain food. They had nothing in and of themselves. Complete and utter poverty was experienced. Therefore, they needed to trust on and rely upon God's grace and God's provision in his grace for them. But also we note about Ruth that there was pride absent. She wasn't too proud, was she, to go behind the reapers and glean, to be seen among the poor, the outcast in society. She didn't say, "Well,
I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that job. If God provides a job for us, whether it be cleaning the streets, whether it be cleaning the public toilets, we ought to be thankful. We ought not to be too proud to take such on that will provide for us. Teaches us also that she was prepared for industry. It was hard work from morning to evening. And yet she was prepared to be industrious. To put her shoulder, as it were, to the plough. To work hard. But it also teaches us that she had proper love. Proper love for Naomi. It wasn't just love that was superficial that she said she had, but it was love indeed also in her work. It is with such a disposition then, dear congregation, that we see Ruth requesting to go and to work in a harvest field. But secondly, we should also make note of God. God, the provider of the right harvest field. Verse 3. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And her hat was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was the kindred of Elimelech. The provider of the right field was God. Here we have before us the magisterial and comforting doctrine of God's providence. The providence of God. We have been mentioning this throughout this series. And here we have it before us laid there in verse 3 of chapter 2. You see, dear saints, Ruth did not know of Boaz or go with any purpose to glean on his land. And you might say to me, well, she knew all this other stuff. How on earth did she not know about Boaz? Well, remember, verse 1 is only a preface by the narrator. And then we read in verse 19 of chapter 2. And when her mother-in-law said unto her, that was Naomi, where hast thou gleaned today? And where wroughtest thou? So Naomi didn't know what field she was going into. Blessed be he that did take knowledge of thee. And she showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought and said, this man's name with whom I wrought today is Boaz. That conveys to us, doesn't it? That neither Naomi or Ruth had thought prior of Boaz. And this, as it were, pricks Naomi's conscience and memory when she hears this name Boaz. And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead. And Naomi said unto her, the man is near of kin unto us, one of our next kinsmen. So this tells us that they had not had a previous conversation about Boaz. Naomi, in her bitterness, we noted before, had forgotten about the kinsman redeemer. She hadn't forgotten the law, but she had forgotten about the redeemer. And Ruth, well, she was just faithful in her willingness to go and find a field and to work in it. So now we start to see, don't we? God's invisible hand directing Ruth to the correct field. Remember, Ruth went trusting that she would not find an unfavourable landowner. Not Boaz specifically. That was the work of God, dear congregation. God was uniting Boaz and Ruth. You see, I suggest to you that both elements of a gracious man and a close relative were essential to bring light out of this darkness. And only God could work such a work. A gracious man and a close relative. Only God could bring one before Ruth. Now we note God's providence in this phrase we find in verse 3b. And her hap was to light on a part of the field. It happened that she went onto a part of a field that belonged unto Boaz. Or she just happened by chance, we could say, to go into this field. Now, this phrase is not, we need to be careful, because we use language in a different way today, don't we? This phrase is not conveying to us that by chance she could have ended up on any other piece of the land. Some other landowners. That's not what we are being told. We would normally say, or those who do not know of the doctrine of providence would say, oh, lucky her. That was lucky of her. Children, you should avoid using that term. You should try not ever to say, oh, lucky you. Oh, I was lucky there. No, God directs. It's God's providence. But this expression here, her hap was, is making clear to the reader that Ruth did not herself know. She did not know the people nor any of the owners of the land unto which she found herself. She knew nothing but her duty and the God she had come to know directed the rest. It's not a comforting truth for us. We should know our duty. One minister of the past said once unto me, the safest place is the place of duty. And he was right. It is true. And here we have Ruth. Where is she found? She is found in the place of duty. And now God is directing the rest. Now we note here that she went into a field. And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. Now the field here is in the singular. And her hap was to light on part of the field. A single field. Now the singular use here helps us to understand better the circumstances that Ruth here faced. And also shows to us God's invisible hand in dealing with Ruth. You know, dear saints, we are not to think of this as a great city with various landowners and many different fields to choose from. That's not the way it was. It might be that today when we think of farming, a farmer has his own fields and his own fields are separated off one from the other. But this isn't how it was here for Ruth. Rather, it would have been one large field. And all of the landowners would have had land on this one large field. And this one large field would have been divided up into different pieces of land by rocks. Rocks would have been laid along the ground, dividing up this large field. It was a common field for all landowners. They would have all grown their crops together with portion of the land separated only by rocks. So let us look through the eyes of Ruth. You know, here we go have Ruth, her willingness to go and to work. She comes to this one big large field. It has workers, labourers in the field. She wouldn't have been able to have seen rocks separating land. She just would have went onto the piece of that field that God directed her to in his divine providence and fatherly care. You see, she wouldn't have known. She just would have seen a mass of workers in one big land. And different parts of this land would have been owned by different landowners. Providence. God not only creates. This is what providence is. God not only creates in his creative power, but he also sustains and upholds that which he has created. One writer remarks, creation brings forth existence. Preservation, that is providence, is persistence in existence. You see, God has made provision for that which he has created. And we can, as it were, micro examine that, right down to our own lives, God has created us. God sustains us in his providential care. Providence, then, is not a work of Ruth. It's not a work of Boaz. It's not the direction of Naomi. Providence is a divine work of preservation. We see it here in the lives of Ruth and Naomi. Dear children, they're going to be preserved. They're going to have food. Their bodily needs are going to be met. God's providential and fatherly care for Ruth and Naomi. Now I expand that out, I stretch it out, and we see God's providence preserving the plan of redemption through Ruth and Boaz. You see, God is interested in the minutiae of our lives. Children, never think that God is not in control even of the small things in our lives. He is. Some think God's only concerned with the big things. No. In his fatherly and providential care, he works through those things that seem to be mean and meager to us. But God uses them in his providence. His most holy, wise, powerful, preserving and governing of all his creatures and all of their actions. I'm sure the children are familiar with that question and answer from the shorter catechism. God does not create and forget. That is the old heresy of the deists. The deists believe that God is like a big watchmaker. God has made the watch, set the time, and started the watch, and walked away, and left it to itself. No, no. God sustains. God preserves. God cares intimately for that which he has created. But thirdly, we note Boaz. Boaz, behold the kinsman who owns the field. The kinsman who owns the field. We read in verse 1 that he is a kinsman, that he is a mighty man of wealth. And in verse 4 we read, and behold, the narrator's trying to get our attention. He's highlighting something for us, is that the kinsman redeemer now draws near. The author wants us to take note of this man Boaz. Behold, we could say, it's saying, lo, look, here he comes. Here is Boaz, coming as it were to save Ruth and Naomi. Here comes the Redeemer, the Rescuer, the Reliever of these desperate women in their desperate plight. And he's the owner of this field. Their great plight was needing a great and near kinsman. And here he comes, dear congregation. So what do we learn here about him? And this will be brief as we'll consider him as we go on throughout this study. But here, at the commencement, we note that he is qualified. Qualified to redeem Ruth and Naomi. And he's qualified in two ways. By law. Why? Because he was a kinsman. He was a near kinsman unto them. And by character. He was a mighty man. A mighty man of wealth. A mighty man of sustenance. So he not only met the requirements of the law, but he also in himself had the provision to save them. Does that not speak of Christ? Right from the very outset of our introduction to Boaz, Christ was qualified because he was born under the law. He was our near kinsman, our nature. He came in our nature and remains in our nature still. But also his character. He was without sin. He had the provision within himself to save us from our sins. Well, let us note these two things of Boaz very briefly. He is a kinsman. Quite simply, children, that means that he is a redeemer. that he can redeem, purchase, buy Naomi and Ruth. Purchase them. God in his grace had made provision for such who in their impoverished state were unable to help themselves. A kinsman redeemer was to be a member of the extended family. And we read in verse 1 that he was a member of the extended family. He wasn't a close family member, as it were, to Naomi, but on the side of Elimelech. But that still fell under the provision of the law. And a member of the extended family who at their own cost to themselves, restored, redeemed the one who suffered loss. Now you can find that in Leviticus 25, verse 23 to 33, and verses 48 and 49. For time, we will not turn to them, but Leviticus 25 sets out for us this law of the kinsman redeemer. So Boaz was qualified under the law to be the redeemer. But also his character. He was a mighty man. A mighty man of wealth. Verse 1. But he was also a man of God. Verse 4. Boaz came from Bethlehem and said unto the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless thee." The author sets before us here, dear congregation, a man who is a solid citizen of the commonwealth of Israel. He was an upright man, a true Israelite of God, a true citizen of the kingdom of God. His faith and uprightness seemed to permeate every aspect of his life. And how do we know this? We'll see how he treated his workers in verse 4. He treats his workers graciously. The Lord be with you. You see how he greets them? The Lord is preeminent in his relationship with his employees. So we see here his godliness would have permeated throughout his whole life. So, where Ruth taught us industry in the workplace, her willingness, her zeal, Boaz teaches us godliness in the workplace. So when you're thinking of the workplace, whether you're an employer, an entrepreneur, or whether you're an employee, we have here two examples set before us. We are to be industrious, and we are to be godly in the workplace. Boaz, dear congregation, we will see, is a type of Christ. We have already noted that here at this time. Boaz is a type of Christ, and we see somewhat of that even in these verses before us. First one, he is called a mighty man of wealth. Now the Hebrew word there used is Gibor. It means mighty one, a mighty warrior. And Ruth, we will read further on, finds grace in his sight. Verse 20. And Naomi said unto her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living." That word there is that Hebrew word, Hesed, the covenant kindness of God, God's covenant mercy. So we have Gibor and Hesed, and then we turn to Psalm 117, the central chapter of the whole of the Bible, and verse 2, "For his merciful kindness is great toward us." And here we have a Christological reference with the use of Gibor and Hesed, a mighty warrior, one who bestows mercy. Who's it speaking of? It's speaking of Jesus Christ. He is the mighty one. He is the one who bestows this covenant mercy upon his people. And as we will come to see, Boaz is the Gibor, the mighty one, who bestows chesed, covenant mercy, upon Ruth. And so Christ is to us, dear congregation. What a great truth that is even set before us in telling us that Boaz is mighty man. And that Boaz, as it were, bestows kindness upon Ruth. Do you see what's shining forth here? Christ is shining forth in all of his grace and his mercy unto his people. Well, there's one further use that I want us to make of this before we close. And that is with the doctrine of providence. Providence. What does this mean for us? What does it mean? Well, God's providence rules all things, doesn't it? His providential workings. And dear congregation, I want you to know that God's providence is his fatherly care for us, for his people. God's fatherly care then rules all things. Now, this is significant. This is a great comfort to us. God's fatherly care rules all things. What else do we need to know in this world of change, of trouble, of decay, of sorrow, of death, of loss? God's fatherly care for his people. And all that comes to pass, God governs it in his fatherly care for us, dear saints. This ought to gladden and assure us, no matter the providence we find ourselves in, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, yes, this ought to gladden and rejoice the heart. That you find yourself in the shadow of the valley of death by God's fatherly care and fatherly love towards you. One Puritan remarked, "The center of God's providence is Christ's care for his church." Is this not what we have just noted in these verses? God ordering the big and the small, the significant and the seeming insignificant, ordering all that Boaz and Ruth would be brought together in a harvest field for the care and for the redemption of the church. It's a marvellous thought. It's a comforting thought. We should go away from the house of God today comforted in this truth. That God's fatherly care directs our ways. For the care and redemption of the church, Ruth and Boaz have been brought together. Much more here than one man and one woman, isn't there? There is Christ. And what's he doing? He's redeeming his people. Christ is redeeming his people for all eternity. May the Lord bless these thoughts to each of our hearts. Let us pray.